Ah, you're here. Good.
A ghost couldn't dig a grave, make John strangle me to death.
Lights out, everybody.
Welcome to the Old Time Radio Cast, where we take the most terrifying tales from the golden age of radio, clean them up, and remaster them for your listening pleasure, truly preserving the very best era of audio entertainment with stories of suspense, mystery, and horror. In this week's episode, we will hear stories from The Sealed Book. Lasting 26 episodes, The Keeper of the Book shares stories from its pages containing all of the secrets and mysteries of mankind throughout the ages. Take note of the extended organ sequences. These were to allow local radio stations to insert commercials. I've selected two haunted house stories for you, titled Stranger in the House, followed by Death at Storm House. Enjoy the show.
The Sealed Book. Once again, the Keeper of the Book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the Book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of a cursed and evil spirit. A spirit that threatened the peace and happiness of a young married couple. A tale called Stranger in the House. Here is the tale, Stranger in the House, as it is written on the pages of the sealed book. The tale was told by Jane Barton herself.
From the first moment I saw Wickford Manor, I was filled with a sense of uneasiness, almost fear, a fear I couldn't explain. To all outward appearances, Wickford Manor was just another old, staunchly built colonial house, the kind you see through all New England. Roger, my husband, was delighted with the house. Its beauty and remoteness won his heart from the beginning.
Say, take a look at that beautiful staircase. Look at this magnificent fireplace in the drawing room.
Yes, it is beautiful, Roger.
It's just the size house we need, with four rooms upstairs.
Four rooms upstairs? How do you know, Roger? The agent never mentioned how many rooms the house had.
Didn't he? Mm. Well, there's only one way to find out. Let's go upstairs and look. Come on, Janie.
All right, Roger.
Yeah, this house would require very little in the way of repairs.
But it hasn't any electricity, Roger.
Oh, well, we could use lamps until a line could be run to the house. Look, Janie, there are four rooms up here.
So there are. It's as though you've been in this house before.
Yes, I have a feeling I have. Well, perhaps that's the reason I like it. But, darling, you've been ever so quiet since we entered the house. Don't you care for it?
I don't know. It seems unfriendly.
Well, if you don't like it, then we'll keep on looking until we find a house we both like.
Oh, nonsense. I've been married to you too long not to know you've got your heart set on this place. We'll never find anything nicer. Now, that room with the southern exposure will be our bedroom.
Oh, Janie, you're wonderful. And we will be happy here. I know we will.
Because I loved Roger and wanted to see him happy, I buried my fears and agreed to the purchase of the house. The first evening in our new home, as I went about the drawing room unpacking our belongings, I suddenly realized how cold and clammy the room was in spite of the roaring fire. Beyond the feeble light of the oil lamp, the room was thick with fog. Suddenly it seemed to engulf me like a shroud, and I felt the icy coldness of the grave upon me. My heart pounded in my ears. I fell faint. After what seemed like eternity, the fog rolled away. The light of the lamp became brighter. I felt unbearably alone. I rushed out of the drawing room. As I opened the door to the study, I saw Roger seated before the fireplace. He was staring unseeingly at the ashes of a fire long since gone out. Roger. Roger. Roger!
What? Oh, it's you, Jane.
Roger, is anything wrong?
Wrong?
Yes, you seem so far away, remote. It frightened me. Do you smell perfume in here?
Perfume? Why, yes. It's the perfume I gave you for your birthday, isn't it?
No. No, it isn't my perfume. It smells like narcissus.
Yes, so it does.
How strange. Roger, what were you thinking of when I came in here?
I don't know. My mind was reaching out for something. Something in the past. But it was also confused. It was as if I were wandering in a fog.
Wandering in a fog?
Yes. Well, Jane, you're so pale. Aren't you feeling well?
I'm just tired. It's been rather a tiring day.
Now you go up to bed, Jane. I'll be along later.
All right, dear. Don't forget to turn out the lamp when you come up.
I won't.
I left the study and Roger. After tossing in my bed for hours, I fell into a fitful sleep. I suddenly awakened to hear the clock in the hall striking the hour. It was 5 o'clock, and Roger's bed was empty. Quickly slipping on my robe, I left my room and started down the stairs. As I reached the foot of the stairs, I stopped. But to my astonishment, I heard Roger's voice in the study. I slowly approached until I was at the door.
Who are you? This mist. If I could only make you out clearer. It's so difficult. Mist obscures your face. Who are you? Why don't you say something?
Roger! Roger! Unlock the door! It's Jane!
What's wrong? The mist, it's coming between us. I can hardly see you. Oh, don't go. Come back, please. Please come back.
Darling! Darling, please unlock this door. Please! Roger!
Thank you.
The story as it is written in the sealed book. It was 5 o'clock in the morning when Jane suddenly woke and found Roger locked in his study. He was apparently talking to someone, although there could be no one there. Hysterically, Jane pounded on the study door.
Darling, darling, unlock the door, please. Roger! Oh, Roger.
What is it, Jane?
I was so frightened. Who are you talking to?
Talking to? I don't know. I must have been dreaming.
Oh, yes. Yes, you must have been. There isn't anyone in here. Roger, the scent of narcissus. So strong in here.
Yes.
Much stronger than it was at midnight. Roger, what were you dreaming about?
It was night. All around me was a mist. And there was a woman.
A woman?
Yes. I could barely make out her face in the swirling mists. But it was a beautiful face. The most beautiful face I've ever seen.
Did you feel you'd seen her before?
Yes. But I couldn't remember where. Oh,
what do you make of it, Roger?
Make of it? Oh, it was just a dream, I suppose. What else could it have been?
Roger said it was a dream. But in his heart, I knew he believed it was more than a dream. During the days that followed, he'd pace incessantly in the study, paying no attention to me, living only for the coming of twilight. And when night did fall, he'd lock himself in the study, forbidding me to disturb him. Hours would pass, and then suddenly I'd hear him talking to her, begging her to come closer, pleading with her to speak to him. At last, one night, I couldn't stand it any longer. When he began talking to her, I knocked on the door of the study until he opened it.
What do you want? I thought I told you I wasn't to be disturbed.
I must talk
you
to
must
you.
You must be fool. She was about to speak to me for the first time. And you knocked on the door and caused her to vanish.
Oh, Roger, Roger, you're not in love with her. You couldn't be.
But I am. There's never a moment I don't think of her. Wish that I might see her.
Oh, what you're saying is madness. You can't be in love with her. She's from another world, a phantom, an evil ghost.
No, she isn't evil. She's beautiful. So beautiful I'd give my life for her.
Roger, listen to me. You must come away from this house and from her. She's cast a spell over you, and it can only lead to disaster. Roger, we must leave this house at once.
No, never.
I insist.
Get out, you hear? And don't come back. I'll never leave her, never.
Dr. Smith, in view of what I've told you, do you think you can help me?
Now, you say, Mrs. Barton, that when you drove out to Wickford Manor for the first time, your husband seemed to recognize the house?
Certain things about it, yes.
There's a history to Wickford Manor, though few people are familiar with it.
A history to Wickford Manor?
Yes. The house was built in 1811 by Martin Wickford for his bride, Harriet. A year later, Harriet's sister, Isabel, came to live with the Wickfords. She was a remarkably beautiful woman. So beautiful that Martin Wickford fell in love with her and she with him.
Then what happened?
Well, one day, while Martin was hunting in the mountains, he was killed in a fall. When his companions brought his body back to Wickford Manor, they found Harriet, his wife, dead. She'd been poisoned.
Poisoned?
Yes. At the sight of Martin's body, Isabel went to pieces and confessed that she had poisoned her sister. Before she could be arrested, she committed suicide. In the study.
In the study?
Yes. In the years that followed the tragedy, Wickford Manor had a succession of tenants, all of whom left after a brief residence.
You mean they saw her too?
Well, the tenants made no claim of seeing anyone, but their fear of an unknown element in the house led them to leave.
If the other tenants never saw her, why should Roger see her?
Mrs. Barton, You said that your husband seemed to know many things beforehand about the house.
Yes, I recall joking with him about it. I said it was as though he'd been there before.
Perhaps he had, long ago, as another person.
As another person?
Yes.
You mean Roger had once known Wickford Manor in some previous life?
How else do you account for his remembrance of things that he'd never seen in this life?
Oh, you're trying to tell me something, Doctor. What is it?
Perhaps your husband and the spirit of the woman Isabel are able to bridge the gap of time and space because they had once known each other in another life.
Doctor, you don't believe that Roger was Martin Wickford?
I don't know. What is happening at Wickford Manor is beyond the knowledge of the living. But this I do know. We must return to the manor at once, for the spirit that's abroad in the house is one to be feared more than death itself.
Please come closer so I can see you better. Oh, you're beautiful. Beautiful. Can't you... Won't you tell me who you are? We have met before, haven't we?
Yes. We've met before.
What? You spoke.
I've waited so long for you, Martin.
Why do you call me Martin? My name's Roger.
It was Martin. Then.
Then? What do you mean?
Look at me, Martin. Look into my eyes. Don't you remember me?
Yes, but where?
Think, Martin. Think. Time is the barrier between us, but we shall surmount it. Think back into the dim past when you lived in this house and we loved each other.
Isabel.
Yes, Martin. Isabel. Do you remember now?
Yes, Isabel, yes. I remember everything up to the day I went hunting in the mountains and fell. What happened to me, Isabel? What happened to us? To our love?
Don't think of that accursed day, darling. But think of the future. Our happiness together.
Oh, yes, Isabel. Our happiness together.
Roger, please open this door. Roger!
Martin, she's come back.
Yes. Darling, don't go. Don't leave me.
I must, Martin. I must. We could be so happy together.
Come back. Please come back.
Roger, please unlock the door. Please.
What do you want? What did you come for?
Roger, this is Dr. Smith. Doctor, this is my husband.
What the devil did you bring him here for?
Roger, please. I thought perhaps he could help us.
Help us? I don't need anybody's help.
I must warn you, Mr. Barton. The spirit of the woman you see in the study is an evil one. One that will lead you to disaster.
I don't need help from you or anybody else. Now get out of this house. Get out, both of you.
Doctor, we must do something. We must.
We shall. But not tonight. I must have time to think about it. You'd better return to the village with me.
No, I don't want to leave him in the house alone. Something might happen to him.
Very well, Anne. I'll return late tomorrow afternoon, and when I do, we shall take action.
Isabel, where are you? I'm alone now, darling. Please come back.
I'm here, Martin. I'm here.
Oh, yes, I see you now. Promise you'll never leave me again, Isabel.
I don't want to leave you, darling. But that woman is trying to come between us.
Jane?
Yes. She hates me, Martin. She will come between us if you don't get rid of her.
I tried to make her leave, but she wouldn't go.
Then that leaves only one thing to do.
One thing to do?
Yes. Come. We must hurry. It's almost dawn, and I'll have to leave you soon. Look at her. lying there asleep, so defenseless. Yes, go ahead. Put your hands around her throat and squeeze.
Oh.
Hurry, Martin, before she awakens.
Who's there?
Answer her.
It's Roger.
Oh, for a moment I was so frightened. What time is it?
It's just dawn.
Hurry, Martin, I must leave.
Yes.
Roger, why are you looking at me like that? Oh, no, Roger. No, Thomas!
Tighter, Martin. Tighter. Until she stops struggling and is still forever.
Isabel, don't leave me. Isabel, where are you? Isabel, please don't leave me, Isabel.
Roger, she made you do it, didn't she? Oh, Roger.
To continue the story as it is written in the sealed book. As Jane finished describing to the doctor how Roger, urged on by the sinister spirit he called Isabel, had nearly strangled her, the doctor spoke.
And then, Mrs. Barton, you say your husband stopped choking you and ran out of your room and down to the study?
Yes, Dr. Smith.
Oh, I should have known better than to let you remain in this house last night. Don't you see? This Isabel knows that if he murders you, he will then join her cursed spirit forever in this house.
Oh, look. Look, it's growing dark out. Soon she'll appear to bewitch him again. Doctor, we must do something.
Very well. This woman, Isabel, has been denied the peace of the grave because her sister's blood is on her hands. She belongs neither to the living or the dead, only to this house. If we could get your husband to leave, perhaps it would break the spell she's cast over him.
Yes, but he absolutely refuses to leave.
Then we must force him to. I could very quickly give him a hypodermic and render him unconscious.
Yes. Then we could carry him away.
And to make sure he never returns to this house, we must burn it to the ground before we leave.
Yes, we will burn it. And the evil that's in it.
Then if you'll lead me to the study.
All right, Doctor. Have you the hypodermic ready?
Yes. Now, when your husband opens the door, just gain his attention for a moment. Long enough for me to give him the injection.
Yes, very well. Roger! Roger, open the door. I want to talk to you.
What do you want? Why has he come back to this house?
He's come to take me away, Roger.
To take you away? Yes. Good. I'm glad to see you. What have you stuck me with? What's that in your hand?
Just a hypodermic, Mr. Barton.
A hypodermic? What are you up to? You're trying to take me away from this house. From her. Well, I won't go. I won't go. Do you hear?
Doctor, quick. Never. Quick, he's falling. Ah,
I've got him, Mrs. Barton. Now I suggest you take that lamp and smash it on the floor.
Yes. Let's burn the place down to the ground.
Yeah, that's it. Now you'd better help me carry your husband out of the house. In a little while, this house will be a raging inferno. He's regaining consciousness, Mrs. Barton.
Will he remember what's happened?
I don't know.
How are you, darling?
Hello, Janie. Oh, but I had a terrible dream. It's all so confused.
You've been very ill, but now you're going to be all right.
Of course.
Oh. Where am I?
You're in my home, Mr. Barton.
Yes, darling. Our house burned down last night.
Burned down? Oh, that's too bad. Well, we only had one night in our new home.
One night? Yes, of course, Roger.
Well, Mrs. Barton, in spite of the loss of your home, I think you were very fortunate, for there are things far worse than fire.
Yes, Doctor. And I can never thank you enough for breaking the bridge between the past and the present.
What are you two talking about?
Oh, nothing, darling. Nothing at all.
Roger, you've been humming that all day.
Well, I like it.
But you can't carry a tune.
Oh, nonsense. I've carried this tune for 300 miles, and I'll carry it the rest of the way to California.
Oh, what a trip this is going to be.
Roger.
What?
Do you smell something?
Yes. Good night air.
No, I don't mean that.
Well, what's wrong with you, Janie?
Don't you smell it?
What? You mean that perfume?
Yes.
Seems familiar. What is it?
Narcissus.
Narcissus?
Yes. Oh, Roger, we haven't escaped from her. She's here in this car.
Mark, it's Isabel. Think, darling. Think.
Roger. You look as though you're listening to her.
You do remember everything now. Don't you, Martin?
Yes.
Darling, we must get rid of her. She's trying to come between us.
Yes.
Oh, Roger, you mustn't listen to her.
Once she's gone, we'll be together forever, darling.
Yes. Forever.
Roger. Roger, why have you stopped the car? No. No, don't look at me like that. Roger, no. Stay away from me. You mustn't. Oh.
A few hours after Jane was found strangled in the abandoned car, state police arrested Roger Barton and charged him with murder. Strangely enough, as Roger was being hanged for his crime, witnesses at the execution noticed a strange scent of perfume about the gallows. Some people said afterwards that it was Narcissus, and they remarked on the expression of joy on Roger's face as he died.
Thank you.
And now, keeper of the book, before you close the great volume, show us the tale we tell next time. This one. Ah, yes, a weird and incredible tale of a wife who was being blackmailed because of her past. But because she did not know the identity of her blackmailer, she suffered 1,000 times over. The tale is called Out of the Past. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book. The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor. The Sealed Book. Once again, the keeper of the book has opened the ponderous door to the secret vault, wherein is kept the great sealed book, in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. Here are tales of every kind, tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds strange and terrible beyond all belief. Keeper of the book, I would know what tale we tell this time. Open the great book and let us read. Slowly, the great book opens. One by one, the keeper of the book turns the pages and stops. Ah, the strange story of a beautiful woman whose jealousy was so great that even the grave could not give her peace. A tale called Death at Stormhouse. Here is the tale, Death at Stormhouse, as it is written in the pages of the sealed book. It takes place in the old New England mansion known as Stormhouse, perched high on the cliffs above the crashing waves of the Atlantic Ocean. In her bedroom, Lizette Lester, young and beautiful mistress of Stormhouse, lies desperately ill, listening to the storm that is raging outside as her husband and Dr. Warren, their lifelong friend, hover over her.
John. John.
Yes, Lizette.
John, open the window. I want to hear the storm. I want to hear the thunder crash and the wind scream.
I'll open it, John. You stay with Lizette.
Thank you, Howard.
Oh, it's a wonderful storm. I've known it was coming for 3 days. I've always known when a storm was coming, haven't I, John?
Yes. Yes, Lizette. You've always known.
And I've been waiting for this one. I've been waiting for it so I could die as I was born. On a night when there's a storm filling the sky and death riding the wind to take me as it took my mother that night.
Lizette, don't say that.
You mustn't excite yourself, Lizette. It weakens you.
I'm dying, Doctor. You know it as well as I do. It's only the storm that's keeping me alive now.
Oh, Lizette. Lizette.
John, darling.
Yes, Lizette.
In my will, there's a bequest to old Andrew for his faithful service. Everything else is left to you, including the house. On condition that you live here at least 6 months out of every year for the rest of your life.
Lizette, I can't bear to talk about it.
But we must, darling. You don't mind the condition that you live here half of every year, do you?
Of course not, my dearest.
I couldn't bear to think of you as ever very far from me, in life or in death.
I'll always be with you, my darling.
And you won't marry again, will you, John?
Never, Lizette. I swear it.
You've sworn it, John. You mustn't break your vow. If you do, I'll be angry. Very angry. And when I'm angry, I do terrible things. You know that.
I know, darling. You have my promise. I'll never break it.
It's such a beautiful night. All my life, I've never been able to sleep on a night like this. I wonder if now when the storm sweeps in from the sea, I'll know it and wake up. Oh.
Lizette. Lizette. John. She's gone.
There, it's done, Mr. John. I couldn't want better if it was myself buried down there in the ground.
Thank you, Andrew.
I'll put the tools away now. Call me if you want me.
I can't believe it's Lizette we buried here, Howard. Somehow she seems still alive. She loved living so.
It's a beautiful spot here on the edge of the cliff.
She made me promise she should be buried here, where she could watch the storms come in from the sea, hear the waves beating on the rocks below.
John, do you mind if I speak personally to you?
Why should I? You're my best friend. My only one, in fact.
That's one of the things I wanted to talk about. In the 3 years since you married, you haven't painted a single picture.
No. No, I haven't. I've started some, but there was always something Lizette wanted to do.
For 3 years, you've been cooped up here, seeing no one. You might as well have been in prison. You should get away for a while now. Why don't you spend the winter in New York? Renew old friendship. Catch up on what's happening in painting.
Yes. I'd like that.
And there's another thing.
Yes, Howard?
The promise you made to Lizette.
Promise? Oh, you mean not to marry again?
Yes. You mustn't take it too seriously. You're too young to spend your life alone, grieving. Lizette wouldn't have made you promise if she had thought...
I don't know. It seemed to mean so much to her. Well, when Lizette was alive, it seemed quite impossible to me I should ever love another woman.
But you will... And I'm sure Lizette would understand.
I'll think about it, Howard. The truth is, just now, I feel a little confused.
Well, let time take care of the matter. But you will close up Storm House and try a few months in the city?
Yes, I will. I'll come back in the spring. After all, I'm obligated to live here half the year. But I'll leave old Andrew in charge and spend the winter in New York.
Thank you.
And now to continue the story, as it is written in the sealed book. Once away from the somber atmosphere of Stormhouse, John Lester seemed to waken as if from a dream. He began to paint again, to live as he had before his marriage to Lisette. Then at a party he met Nora Maynard, young, gay, lovely. And one day in the spring he brought her back to Stormhouse as his bride. He introduced her to old Andrew, the caretaker, showed her through the house, then took her out to see the magnificent view from the top of the cliffs.
Oh, John, it's a wonderful old place. The house, the cliffs, the sea. I'm going to love every minute here.
I was afraid it might seem rather wild and gloomy to you, Nora.
Oh, no. Look, the clouds, the waves tossing as far as you can see, the ocean way down below us. It's magnificent.
Yeah, it can be frightening, too, when a real storm comes sweeping in from the sea.
John, what's that over there on that little point?
It's Stormhouse's private burying ground. That grave you see is Lisette's.
Lisette? Will you tell me more about her sometime, John?
Yes, of course. Well, now we'd better go in. It's almost dark. All of a sudden, the wind seems to be rising.
Oh, just one minute more.
I want to tell Andrew to phone the village for groceries before the stores close.
Well, you run in and tell him. I'll come in right away.
And don't be long. The wind's getting cold.
Poor Lisette. I wonder what she was like. I wonder if she used to stand here and watch the darkness sweep over the sea and... John? Is that you? John, it's so dark I can't see you. John, don't... I'll fall out!
Nora, what is it?
Oh.
Did you call me, Nora?
Oh, John, you frightened me. I thought you really were trying to push me over.
Push you over?
I know you were just joking, but I almost lost my balance. I almost went over the cliff.
Nora, I didn't push you. I was halfway up the path when you called.
You were halfway up the path?
I wouldn't play a joke like that. You must have become dizzy.
I suppose so. But I was sure I felt your hand push me. And then the wind seemed to force me toward the edge.
It must have been the height. Made you lose your balance.
Yes, of course. That was it.
Darling, come inside now. Promise me you won't ever go close to the edge of the cliff again.
Yes, let's go inside. And I promise, John, the cliff frightens me now.
During those first weeks after John Lester returned to Stormhouse with his new bride, the wind never ceased to howl about the great old house. Several times when Nora was walking near the cliffs, strong gusts sprang up that would have pushed her over to her death if she had been walking closer to the edge. Then one afternoon, Nora discovered old Andrew piling flat, large rocks on top of Lisette's grave.
Andrew, what in the world are you doing? What are those rocks in Lisette's grave for?
It's the wind, Miss Nora. Blowing night and day like it has, it's been blowing the dirt right from off Miss Lisette's grave.
How strange.
Yes, sirree. Give it a couple more weeks and it scooped up all the earth and had the coffin clear uncovered. But the rocks will stop that. Yeah, I guess that's enough.
Andrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Did Lisette love John so very much?
Love Mr. Lester? Why, yes, I expect she did, ma'am, in her way.
In her way?
Excuse me, Miss Nora, I got to drive to town now for a package for Mr. Lester.
Oh, his new paints from New York. He's been so impatient for them. Oh, Andrew.
Yes, ma'am?
That big stone vase on the upper terrace, right beside the steps. It's loose on its base. I saw it swaying yesterday as if it were going to fall over into the garden. Please fix it, will you?
Yeah, as soon as I get back from town, ma'am.
Thank you, Andrew. You know that Dr. Warren's staying for dinner.
Yes, Mr. Lester told me.
Oh, well, I promised to meet him in the garden at 4. Be sure to fix the vase, Andrew. Yeah. Dr. Warren, have I kept you waiting long?
Well, there you are, Nora. I was just beginning to be afraid you'd gone too close to the cliff and become dizzy again.
Oh, no. After almost falling over twice, I don't take any chances now.
That's the spirit. Where's John?
Painting on the upper terrace. There he is now.
Oh.
John!
Oh, hello, you two. What are you plotting down there?
A tour of the caves down by the beach. Knock off for the day and come along.
Please do, John.
Well, maybe I will. Light's fading.
John, don't lean on the stone vase. It's loose and... Oh!
Nora, look out!
Nora, you hurt? I'm coming down.
Good grief, that was close. Fell right where you were standing.
You pulled me back just in time.
Nora, are you all right?
Yes. Yes, thanks to Dr. Warren. He saved me. I couldn't move.
I can't understand it. I'd hardly touched it when I went over.
You must have leaned against it harder than you realized.
No, I didn't. I just touched it. It gave way all of a sudden. Oh, thank heaven you were here, Howard.
It must have been the wind. And the vase was loose. I was just telling Andrew to fix it.
If you'd been hurt, Nora.
Oh, a miss is as good as a mile, darling. Come on. Let's forget the caves and go in and have tea instead. The wind has turned awfully cold all of a sudden.
Listen to that confounded wind. I can't even read anymore. It makes such a racket.
Would you like me to read to you, darling?
No. I'm just jumpy, I guess.
It isn't something special, is it? You're not regretting that you married me.
Oh, don't be silly, Nora. It's just the wind. For the last 2 months, it hasn't let up night or day. Listen to it now.
Oh, it is upsetting, darling. Sometimes it sounds just like a voice saying something you can almost make out, but not quite.
I haven't painted a stroke in 2 months. Every day I get my canvas and my paints ready, and then the wind rises and distracts me.
You're not sleeping well, are you, John?
No, I haven't slept for weeks. Nor I can't stand it any longer. I can't stand it. That wind doesn't stop blowing, I think I'll go mad.
Oh, my darling. John, listen to me. Listen to me, dear. We must go away from Storm House, away from the wind. We must, John.
But the will.
The will doesn't matter. Oh, John, please say yes. We can't ever be happy here. There's something about the place that will forever prevent us.
Leave Storm House. Never come back.
And never come back.
Yes. Yes, Nora, you're right. We'll do it. We'll leave tomorrow.
Oh, John! Oh, we're going to have another storm.
Yes. Certainly has come up quickly. Sunset, there wasn't a sign of a storm.
It's as if Storm House knows we're leaving and wants to live up to its reputation on our last night. Well, darling, I think I'll go to bed and dream about leaving here tomorrow. Coming?
No, I'll finish my pipe and tell Andrew our parents.
All right, darling. I'll bring my diary up to date while I wait. Don't be long now.
Mr. John.
What is it, Andrew?
Land sakes, Mr. John. A real granddaddy of a lightning bolt hit the cliff just now, right beside the burying ground. It opened up a big crack in the earth, running right across her grave.
Her grave? Lizette's?
I could look right down and see the top of the coffin.
Oh, well, you can fix it in the morning. We're going to be leaving, Andrew. But we'll settle the details tomorrow. Better turn in now. I'll do the same.
All right, Mr. John. Sure is a humdinger of a storm.
And tomorrow we leave here forever. I do so hope it's going to make a difference. John has seemed so depressed lately. I wonder if it's my fault. If he regrets marrying me. No, I won't think that. Not even this storm can frighten me now. I know John loves me and... Who turned out the light? Who came in then? John, is that you? John, where are you? Don't tease me like this. You're frightening me. John!
Thank you.
to continue the story, as it is written in the sealed book. After the great storm had opened up Lizette's grave so that her coffin was plainly visible, Nora had a midnight visitor. There was a scream and a body crumpled to the floor. The next morning, the sheriff came to talk to John.
That's all of it, Sheriff. That's all I know. Nora screamed. When I got to her, she was lying there on the floor. Dead. Murdered.
But the weapon, Mr. Lester. We know it was that antique ivory paper knife of yours, because the point broke off in the wound. But where is it?
I don't know. I tell you, I didn't see it.
I see. Well, I think you better come with me for the time being, Mr. Lester. Here's the prisoner, Doctor. You can see him for 15 minutes.
Oh, Howard, thank heaven you've come.
John, how are you? Oh,
how am I? I don't know. I don't care. Howard, have they caught Nora's murderer?
They still think you did it.
I gather that they did. And the ivory knife hasn't been found?
Nowhere. And we've searched every inch. John, think. I know when you found Nora, you were shocked and dazed. But the knife, surely you saw it. Surely you drew it from the wound, put it down somewhere. You must have.
I've tried to think, Howard. I'm sure I'm right. There was no knife. Only Nora, crumpled beside her writing desk. The blood staining her nightdress. The wind screaming outside as if in triumph.
I understand. I know you didn't murder Nora. I don't know how we're going to convince the world.
Is it as bad as that?
As bad as that. If only the knife had been found, it could have been suicide then. But the knife is gone, and you testify that Andrew is innocent. So, as there wasn't any other living soul but yourself in the house that night...
I see. Well, I've told them all I can. I don't know how the knife could have disappeared. There's nothing more I can do. Even though they hang me.
And hang John Lester they did, after a due and lawful trial. For in the jury's eyes, the fact of the missing ivory knife that had killed Nora Lester was damning evidence. After the execution, John's old friend Dr. Warren conveyed the body homeward to Stormhouse, where he and faithful old John buried it in the tiny burying ground. Andrew dug the grave close between the graves of Nora and Lizette. So close, in fact, that while digging, his pick struck a coffin.
Doctor, look!
Corner of a coffin. Lizette's coffin, it must be.
Yes. That night the lightning struck the cliff. Must have moved her coffin round somehow. I remember the grave looked a little queer next morning when I fixed things up.
I guess we'll have to dig it up so we can put it back in its proper place.
Yeah, guess we better, Doctor. Well, won't take long. Doctor. Guess that does it all right.
Good. Now we'll just slide the coffin back into its place. You've made plenty of room.
Dr. Warren.
What is it, Andrew?
The lid of this coffin's been tampered with.
Tampered with? But that's impossible.
Come take a look, Doctor. You'll see I'm right.
I guess I'd better. Stand aside, Andrew.
Yes.
Now, just what do you mean?
Look, Doctor. All along both sides and this end.
The screws. They're all loose.
Yes.
They've been pulled out of the wood when someone lifted the lid. This coffin's been forced open.
That's right, Doctor. Only, look, how was it forced open? There's no tool marks on the wood.
No tool marks. Then whoever did this just didn't leave any. Andrew, we've got to look inside and see why Lizette's coffin was molested.
Maybe we'd better leave it just as it is, Doctor.
We can't do that. Here, put your pick under the edge and the lid. That's it. Now, lift.
Well, if you say so.
Easy, does it? There. It's loose. Now, we'll see what...
I told you. I told you we shouldn't open it.
A bloody knife. The ivory knife that killed Nora. Here, in Lizette's coffin.
They hung Mr. John because they couldn't find the knife. And it's been here all along, held tight in Lizette's hand.
So it was beautiful Lizette who killed Nora. Lizette, whose jealousy was so great that it reached back from behind the veil of death. And it was Lizette who took the knife of murder back into her grave with her, so that John, too, would suffer her vengeance. Or was it? Was there some other answer? You must decide that for yourself, for the sealed book does not say. You have heard the story in all its strangeness, just as it is written here. And now, keeper of the book, before you close the great book, show us the tale we tell next time. This one? Ah, yes. Why, this is amazing. It's a tale of a man who killed, a corpse that laughed, and a murder victim who died twice. A tale called The Accusing Corpse. Be sure to be with us again next time when the sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting tale from The Sealed Book. The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To listen to our original storytelling podcasts, and for all things suspense, horror, and weird, check out CrypticCountyPodcasts.com, where you'll find shows like Let's Not Meet, a true horror podcast, and Odd Trails, a true paranormal podcast. We'll see you next time. Stay safe.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story? That's what ought to happen next.
It did.